Jayaradhamadhava Kunjabihari Jayaradhamadhava Kunjabihari Topi janna bhava bhagravare dhare Topi janna pala bhagravare dhare Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vaneta Hariya Yamuna Tira Vaneta Hariya Jayarada Madhava Kunjari Hari Jayarada Madhava Kunjari Hari Jayam Vishnu Pad Bharam Hamsabha Rajakachara Sotara Sada Shri Shinitavayan Grace A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Maharaj Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Samaved Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai Gaur Premananda All glories to some of the devotees All glories to some of the devotees All glories to some of the devotees All glories to Shri Guru and Shri Guranga Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Mastaya Bhutade Shri Mati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste, Saraswati Deem, Gauravani Bhacharani, Nirvishesha, Shringyavadi, Prashtachari, Sitarane. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter, Canto 10, Chapter 6, The Killing of the Demon Putana, Text 39 and 40. Okay, let's chant the first one, Text 39 together. Payang si yasam apipat Putra sneha snutanyalam Bhagavan devaki putra Kaivalyad yakila prada Payamsi yasham apipat Putra sneha snutanyalam Bhagavan devaki putra Kaivalyad yakila prada Payamsi yasam apibat Putra sneha snutanyalam Bhagavan devaki putra Kaivalyad yakila prada
Yeah, so
Yasam Apibat Ladies. Next verse I'll read. Tasam aviratam krishne kurvatinam sutekshanam napuna kalpate rajan samsaro gyanasambhava. Payamsi.
Milk coming from the body.
Yasam. Of all of whom. Apibat. Lord Krishna drank. Putrasneha snutani, that milk coming from the bodies of the gopis, not artificially but because of maternal affection. Alam, sufficiently. Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Devaki Putra, who appeared as the son of Devaki. Kaivalya Adi, like liberation or merging into the Brahman effulgence. Akila Prada, the bestower of all similar blessings. Tasam, of all of them, of all the gopis. Aviratam, constantly. Krishne, unto Lord Krishna. Kurvatinam, making. Suta Ikshanam, as a mother looks upon her child. Na, never. Puna, again. Kalpate, can be imagined. Rajan, O King Parikit. Samsara, the material bondage of birth and death. Ajnana Sambhava, which is to be accepted by foolish persons, ignorantly trying to become happy. Translation purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is the bestower of many benedictions, including liberation, kaivalya, or oneness with the Brahman effulgence. For that Personality of Godhead, the gopis always felt maternal love, and Krishna sucked their breasts with full satisfaction. Therefore, because of their relationship as mother and son, although the gopis were engaged in various family activities, one should never think that they returned to this material world after leaving their bodies. Report. The advantage of Krishna consciousness is described herein. Krishna consciousness gradually develops on the transcendental platform. One may think of Krishna as the Supreme Personality. One may think of Krishna as the Supreme Master. One may think of Krishna as the Supreme Friend. One may think of Krishna as the Supreme Son. Or one may think of Krishna as the Supreme Conjugal Lover. If one is connected with Krishna in any of these transcendental relationships, the course of one's material life is understood to have already ended. As confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, Tyakva Deham Punarjanma Naitimam Iti. For such devotees, going back home, back to Godhead, is guaranteed. Nipuna Kalpate Rajan Sangsaro Gyanasambhava. This verse also guarantees the devotees who constantly think of Krishna in a particular relationship will never return to this material world. In this material world of samsara, there are the same relationships. One thinks, here's my son, here's my wife, here's my lover. Or here's my friend. But these relationships are temporary illusions. Ajnanasambhava. Such a consciousness awakens in ignorance. But when the same relationships awaken in Krishna consciousness, one's spiritual life is revived, and one is guaranteed to return home back to Godhead. Even though the gopis, who were friends of Rohini and Mother Yashoda, and who allowed their breasts to be sucked by Krishna, were not directly Krishna's mothers, they all had the same chance as Rohini and Yashoda to go back to Godhead and act as Krishna's mother-in-law's servants and so on. The word samsara refers to the attachment from one's body, home, husband or wife, and children. But although the gopis and all the other inhabitants of Vrindavan had the same affection and attachment for husband and home, their essential affection was for Krishna in some transcendental relationship, and therefore they were guaranteed to be promoted to Goloka Vrindavan in the next life, to live with Krishna eternally in spiritual happiness. The easiest way to attain spiritual elevation, to be liberated from this material world and to go back home, back to Godhead, is recommended by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Krishnera Sangsara Karachari Anachara. One should give up all sinful activities and remain in the family of Krishna. Then one's liberation is guaranteed. Om Gyan Timurandasha Gananjana Salakaya Chakshuni Tamaya Tazma Shri Gurave Namaha Banchakopa Tubisha Kribasinda Bhavacha Patitano Pavani Bhiva Vaishnava Mo Namaha. So this is a very important pastime, the killing of the Putana witch. We've been studying it for some time, and it's very significant for a number of reasons. First of all, of course, this is the beginning of Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes, and this is the very first demon that's killed, is the Putana demon. And significantly, it also happens to be a woman. I can't think of any other women demons that Krishna killed. So it's kind of unique in that sense, and then that plays into the pastimes and some of the philosophy here. And it's a very spiritually instructive pastime. There's quite a bit of very, very interesting observations and material that the Acharyas have found and that Srila Prabhupada has elucidated in these purports around this whole pastime of Putana. Very early in this chapter, remember that she was described as a sharp sword in a soft sheath. Much like this material world. In other words, Putana came as this most beautiful woman. She looked like a demigoddess. You know, but behind that exterior, what was there? There was death personified. She had simply come to kill children. So in other words, what looked as an externally as something very wonderful and very beautiful, in actuality, was something very demoniac, something very sinful and deadly. Much like we can see this material world. What we've been discussing lately is how Putana received liberation, not only liberation from this material world, but actually received a place not only in the Vaikuntha planets, but in Goloka Vrindavan. So she was liberated in a very similar role as the mothers and the elderly gopis of Vrindavan. It's described that when she went to Goloka Vrindavan after giving up her body, that she became like a nurse or a maidservant. Of Krishna in that Vatsalya Rasa. So this was a very, very exceptional benediction given by Krishna. Most of the demons that Krishna killed received either impersonal liberation or perhaps liberation of Vaikuntha. Remember when Shishupal was killed, he merged into the body. So he received Sarupya. Is that Sarupya? Sayujya. Isn't it? Sayujya liberation. So of course, he had his own special pastime, becoming restored as a gatekeeper in Vrindavan, but in Vaikuntha. But we can understand that most of the demons did not receive the same benediction that Putana received, because she approached Krishna, offering her breast milk in the role, in the guise of a mother, even though it was not sincere. Krishna accepted that offering as a mother, and therefore she gained that very high benediction. Of course, it's also understood, and particularly in this verse, Shukadeva Goswami is more or less emphasizing or pointing out the great benediction that the other elderly gopis and the mothers received. In other words, because Putana was given this great benediction, Shukadeva Goswami did not want to neglect the most, even more exalted position of Mother Yashoda, Mother Rohini, and the other elderly gopis. So in this chapter, we've heard the story of Putana. Then beginning about text 34, 35, through this text 40, there's five or six verses here where Shukadeva Goswami sort of interrupts the narrative and he explains philosophically what's happening. And then in the next verse 41, he goes back to the story again. So this is the concluding verse of the section of about six verses where the spiritual significance of this pastime is explained to all of us. So we can understand, particularly in this verse, the very, very high role of these gopis. And Shukadeva clarifies that the elderly gopis and the mothers attained the topmost platform, even beyond that of Putana. So, in other words, Putana gained this very high position, going to Goloka Vrindavan. But so, what to speak of those who approach Krishna in pure love in the Vatsalya Rasa? In fact, one might say, exactly how is it different? Well, of course, Putana didn't exactly get to be a mother of Krishna, but she got to be in that role and be a servant or a maidservant assisting the mothers of Krishna. So obviously, Rohini and Yashoda and others were in a more exalted eternal position as eternal parents of Krishna. So it's described in this purport, Srila Prabhupada makes this point very clearly, that devotees in any spiritual rasa, like we see the residents of Vrindavan, whether they're in a, whichever it may be, whether it be the Vatsalya Rasa, Shankha, a relationship as a friend, relationship as conjugal lover, relationship as servant, they all attain the highest destination. One is guaranteed that one will go back home, back to Godhead, being in this position of developing this spiritual intimate relationship with Krishna. So it's described here that one should become part of Krishna's family and live eternally with him. So we have this very, very wonderful example of Vrindavan Leela, of the residents of Vrindavan, and how, because it gives us a glimpse of what the spiritual world is, what relationships with Krishna are, how the greatest devotees who are totally pure, how they relate to Krishna, how they interact with him, and what type of wonderful pastimes go on in this eternal abode of Krishna's far from this material world. Of course, this is guaranteed. This is recommended, that this is what we need to do. We need to redevelop that relationship so that we can also enter into these pastimes and go back home, back to Godhead. But we do understand that it's a gradual process. You know, that may not come immediately, for us to be able to develop our spiritual rasa and to completely understand our sarup, our eternal position, may be something that is still some time away for us. We may not be able to fully realize that. But we do understand that as we make spiritual advancement, we are increasingly making Krishna the center of our lives. And increasingly more and more, our relationship with Krishna is developing. So we know that this topmost position that we see exhibited by Mother Yashoda and by Rohini and the gopis is something that is very possible for us, that we develop gradually by this process of Krishna consciousness. Of course, one of the things that should be pointed out is one of the differences, of course, between Mother Yashoda and Putana is that Mother Yashoda's service is favorable to Krishna. It's described, of course, in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu in the 11th verse of the first chapter, the definition of Bhakti Yoga that is Anukulyena Krishnana Shilanam, which means that it is favorable. So real devotional service, a real bhakti, is favorable. Putana did not approach Krishna in a favorable way. Therefore, it's not considered to be on such high of a platform. Similarly, the example is given even in one of the verses of the Bhagavatam about how one can attain perfection, that Kamsa constantly meditated upon Krishna. But his mood, again, was not one that was favorable. It was one of envy and enmity and fear. He was thinking of Krishna day and night. So in one sense, you could say, is that pure bhakti because he's constantly meditating Krishna? Well, no, it isn't, because it wasn't favorable. Obviously, it is favorable to achieving a high stage because one is enwrapped in thoughts of Krishna, but it's not what we are aiming for, obviously. So the devotee wants to be in this very favorable relationship with Krishna, worshiping Krishna with all one's love and with all one's heart. So We make advancement by making Krishna the center. And we have no better examples than these residents of Vrindavan, who constantly thought of Krishna day and night, constantly chanted the glories of Krishna, constantly heard about Krishna, remembered him, and served him. All of their activities were based around, how can I serve Krishna? How can I please Krishna? So Krishna consciousness is not a process of renunciation, really. Renunciation may be there, and we'll talk about that, where its proper place is. But it's really a positive process. And Prabhupada always described that Krishna consciousness was about adding Krishna to our lives. He said, it's not a question of give up, give up, give up. It's a question of add. Add the chanting of Hare Krishna, take prasadam, make Krishna the center, see the deities, chant the holy name, and, of course, hear this philosophy of Krishna consciousness. If we simply add Krishna, and Krishna gradually, little by little, becomes more and more part of our life, more the center of our life, till finally the devotee realizes that Krishna is one's life, that there really is nothing that is of true importance or significance outside of Krishna. So, again, it's a positive process, and it's not that one dryly just tries to renounce the world as the Mayavadis or the impersonalists or the Gyanis tried to do. Prabhupada explained this nicely in this purport when he's talking about the residents of Vrindavan. Prabhupada said, the word samsara refers to attachment for one's body, home, husband or wife, and children. But although the gopis and the other inhabitants of Vrindavan had the same affection and attachment for husband and home, their central affection was for Krishna in some transcendental relationship. And therefore, they were guaranteed to be promoted to Goloka Vrindavan in the next life to live with Krishna eternally in spiritual happiness. So it's interesting that in this purport, Srila Prabhupada is saying that there is some attachment, you know, to other devotees, to other living entities. That's naturally going to be there. We're not impersonalists. It's not that I think I have this relationship with Krishna. I am relating to God and no one else exists. You know, that's a very impersonal sort of idea, that somehow there's this vacuum. It's me and Krishna and nobody else. Kind of a very selfish or self-centered sort of thought when you think about it. Because actually, we are all part of Krishna's family. And that's what Prabhupada is describing here. That just if we think about in a family, if a child or say an older child loved their parents very much, and other siblings, brothers and sisters also love the parents, and the family was a very close family like that, naturally, you know, the child would love his brothers and sisters. They'd be very close to them, feel great affection for them. And, you know, in fact, sometimes you see this in families, you know, after the children are grown, they go back and they get together and they talk about the pastimes of that family, right? Well, we did this when mom and dad took us here and we did this and we did that. So in the same way, you know, the residents of Vrindavan, you know, we all have the common father of Krishna, so all part of that family. So naturally, as we're absorbed in Krishna, talking about Krishna, remembering Krishna's pastimes, we include those other devotees who are also equally loving Krishna. So that's, you know, Srila Prabhupada created the Society of Krishna Consciousness, an international society. Because the idea is that we relate to one another, we come together, we support one another, we enliven one another, and we help one another in the process of Krishna consciousness. And we actually also enjoy the company of other devotees. We enjoy that association. That sadhu sangha is one of our principal practices, one of the five main practices of Krishna consciousness. Why? Why do sadhu sangha? Because we are persons. We have personal relationships with one another, all connected to Krishna. So that's the idea that some, and it's interesting, it says that some attachment may be there. Even, this seemed interesting to me, that even the gopis, who we think of as being, you know, the absolute highest pinnacle of devotional service, is described that even they might have some attachment to their home or husband. But Krishna is the central point. So in other words, that attachment is there, but the main attachment is to Krishna. And therefore, everything else becomes subordinate to that idea of attachment to Krishna, and everything else is used to further that relationship and further one's loving relationship with Krishna. So obviously we want to accept those things which are favorable to Krishna consciousness, reject those things unfavorable. So if our relationships with others is favorable to Krishna consciousness, then we accept those and we appreciate those. So if we're in family life and our wife, our husband, our children are all Krishna conscious devotees of the Lord, and everyone is trying to serve Krishna together. We remind one another of Krishna, we do service together, then that's favorable for Krishna consciousness. And therefore, it does not need to be renounced or rejected. Rather, that's accepted as being part of our practice of devotional service and actually taking up those responsibilities on behalf of the Lord, on behalf of our spiritual master, is a very important part of our bhakti. So we see this even, I remember a couple, few years ago when the Brihad Bhagavatamrita came out and reading what was his name, Madan Gopal? The hero of the story, you know, as he was traveling through all the different planets, and he went up to the Vaikuntha planets, and there's a description of Vaikuntha. And, of course, there's Narayan is there, Vishnu is there in the center. But then it's described that, you know, and I was kind of a little surprised when I first read this, that it, because then it talked about the residents there, and it sounded like the residents had kind of like normal household life. You know, there was, you know, they actually had, you know, their families and husband and wife, and they had homes. And like, yeah, really, it's interesting in Vaikuntha. Because I guess I don't know what I thought. Everyone's sort of just floating there, you know, somehow, you know. And I mean, I guess, again, it's kind of an impersonal, you know, a little bit of our impersonalism that we still have, that we don't think, well, of course, they're naturally going to have, you know, it's like we think that we have something in the material world that isn't there in the spiritual world. Of course not. Everything that is here is there in perfection in the spiritual world. So we have homes, families, all of these things. Of course, they're there in the spiritual world. But they're there in perfection. And the perfection is that everything is centered around Krishna. Everything is centered around developing and increasing our loving relationship with Krishna. So these things can be there, even in the spiritual world. Home, husband, wife, family. But again, it's the difference of consciousness. From material consciousness, thinking these are mine, this is for my enjoyment, to the spiritual consciousness of how everything can be utilized in service to Krishna. So, there's this nice verse from Bhaktivinoda Thakur, from one of his songs, is quoted here by Srila Prabhupada in this purport, and I'm reading it slightly different from another purport of Srila Prabhupada, where he says, "We can also change our homes into Vaikuntha. That is not difficult. We simply have to follow the authorized process of Krishna consciousness. How to do this is explained by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Krishnara Samsara Karachari Anachara. Giving up all sinful activities, carry on your worldly duties only in relationship to Lord Krishna." So this verse that is quoted by Bhaktivinoda Thakur is translated by Srila Prabhupada, "Giving up all sinful activities, carry on your worldly duties only in relationship to Krishna." So there's two important parts to that. The first point is that one simply does not need to change one's life or give up all of one's life, but one follows one's duties and performs one's duties in relationship to Krishna. But the second part also is this: the word is anachara, that one gives up sinful life. So while we say that it's not a process of renunciation, no, but there's a little bit needed. We do need to renounce sinful life. Because one cannot establish, you know, the foundation of Krishna consciousness without having that, you know, the basic foundation of religious life, of spiritual life. So what does that mean for us? Giving up sinful life means the four regular principles. So that's why they are there. So Prabhupada gave us the four regular principles. This is how we give up our sinful life, by following these principles of religion. And therefore, once that is established, that we are more or less established in the mode of goodness, that we're not performing a sinful life, that's the foundation, or that's the platform by which we then positively take the practices of Krishna consciousness, apply them, and become fully Krishna conscious. So give up sinful life, follow the principles, and then utilize everything in our life for the service of Krishna. Make Krishna the center. There's another purport I wanted to read here that explains this principle very nicely. This is from the Bhagavad Gita 5.2. Prabhupada says, "Without Krishna consciousness, mere renunciation of fruitive activities does not actually purify the heart of a conditioned soul. As long as the heart is not purified, one has to work on the fruitive platform. But action in Krishna consciousness automatically helps one escape the result of fruitive action, so that one need not descend to the material platform. Therefore, action in Krishna consciousness is always superior to renunciation, which always entails a risk of falling. Renunciation without Krishna consciousness is incomplete, as confirmed by Srila Rupa Goswami in the Bhaktivinoda Sindhu 1.2.258. Prapanchikataya bhudya hari sambandha vastuna mamukshubi parityago vairagyam palgu katyate. When persons eager to achieve liberation renounce things related to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, thinking them to be material, their renunciation is called incomplete. That's a quote from Rupa Goswami in that series of three verses in that part in the Bhaktivinoda Sindhu where he talks about yukta vairagya, the principle of real renunciation, which is accepting everything favorable to Krishna consciousness. Then he talks about this principle of pogu vairagya, which means this artificial renunciation of things which can be used for Krishna service. So in other words, like the Mayavadis may say, I reject the deity because that's something material, because it has form or whatever. So obviously this is rejected by a devotee. A devotee accepts everything in relationship with Krishna. Then Prabhupada says, renunciation is complete when it is acknowledged that everything in existence belongs to the Lord and no one should claim proprietorship over anything. Once you understand that factually nothing belongs to anyone, then where is the question of renunciation? One who knows that everything is Krishna's property is always situated in renunciation. Since everything belongs to Krishna, everything should be employed in the service of Krishna. So in one sense, the very act of renunciation is a misconception. It's a philosophical mistake because it's saying, if I am renouncing this, I'm thinking that I am the owner and the controller and the possessor of that thing. So the devotee knows if everything is Krishna's, there's no question of renunciation. It's simply how to use that thing in Krishna's service. Everything is Krishna's. Everything is coming from Krishna. Everything is part of his energy, is either his material or spiritual energy. We are part and parcel of Krishna. All living entities are Krishna's. Therefore, we simply try to engage those things in Krishna's service. It's not really a question of renunciation. But I'll take the other side now. There also can be a purpose. There can be a value in the principles of vairagya and jnana. So sometimes these things can be used positively. So there's a verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam 3:25:18, jnana vairagya yuktena bhakti yuktena chatmana. In the position of self-realization, by practice of knowledge and renunciation devotional service, one sees everything in the right perspective. He becomes indifferent to material existence, and the material influence acts less powerfully upon him. So which comes first? Well, we know that it's described that through the process of bhakti, causeless knowledge and detachment arise. So bhakti really comes first. You know, through the process of bhakti devotional service, naturally knowledge comes about. Naturally one understands the nature of Krishna, the nature of the material world, the nature of the jiva, and how it all interacts. And naturally one becomes renounced from the material world. But then one can use that knowledge and renunciation to further serve Krishna in the service of bhakti. So the important thing is to become attached to Krishna. We use everything in Krishna's service. We become absorbed in Krishna. We begin by this process of hearing and chanting. That's why we are hearing Srimad Bhagavatam every day, to become knowledgeable about Krishna, to become attached to Krishna, to become enlivened by hearing these wonderful pastimes of Krishna. Then, of course, we repeat those pastimes. We repeat that knowledge of Krishna. And so, of course, we have so much opportunity for that, for the process of kirtanam, not only chanting, but also Prabhupada says that our preaching is kirtanam. We are relaying the words of Krishna. We are discussing the Krishna's pastimes, Krishna's activities, and the philosophy of understanding Krishna consciousness. And one of the best ways of kirtanam, of course, is to give this knowledge to other people. And it's been very enlivening hearing these reports we have every day of the different preaching and book distribution that's going on. I was thinking about this in one sense, like we don't hear a lot about preaching in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's like Krishna's pastimes of preaching are really when he manifests himself as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And so in Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes, you know, we have that added dimension of preaching to the conditioned souls or to the non-devotees. Of course, in Goloka Vrindavan, everyone's a devotee, so there's no non-devotees to preach to. But in this material world, we have that added dimension of Krishna consciousness and Krishna's pastimes as Lord Chaitanya, coming to deliver the conditioned souls by giving the Yuga Dharma, the Harinam Sankirtan, to all living entities. And of course, as we do that, as we give Krishna consciousness to others, that also increases our own Krishna consciousness, and that deepens and develops our own understanding of who Krishna really is and what our relationship with Krishna is. And as we continue bhakti yoga, continue the process of devotional service, that relationship, the dormant love of Krishna, the Krishna prema that is there within the heart of every living entity, gradually unfolds, develops, until it finally will fully manifest to the point that we'll be able to become completely free from this material world. As Prabhupada says, go back home, back to Godhead. Jai. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Any comments, questions, thoughts? Madan Mohan Prabhu.
I remember in the Nectar Devotion, it had a discussion about renunciation and knowledge, and it says in the beginning they're good for establishing a footing in Krishna consciousness, but ultimately the only thing that's required is the sincere sentiment. And then after that other verse, 11:2:42, it says three things happen simultaneously. So it was devotion was the first, and then it said devotion, direct experience of Krishna, and deep disinterest in everything else happens.
That's sort of the analogy to eating?
For one who's taken shelter of Krishna, just like as one eats, he feels satisfaction, nourishment, and he's full.
So. Right. That's very nice, thank you.
I have two questions, Prabhu. One, talked about Putna. She achieved the pretty high liberation or about the liberation. In the same context is Kansa. Kansa has been remembering Krishna day and night. So did he achieve the same position after his death? That's one question. The other question, what you're saying about bhakti, and then anartha. Once you get involved in the bhakti, anartha disappears, or you have to get rid of anartha first, then you get into bhakti.
A very interesting question. Well, the first question, of course, Kamsa did receive liberation because he was killed directly by Krishna, and he was absorbed in thought of him. But there's no mention that he went directly to Goloka Vrindavan because he did not approach Krishna in that mood of service in the way that Putana did, acting as a mother. So it's because of that very specific service where Putana approached as a mother that she received that higher benediction. I don't know of any other demons that received that achieved Goloka Vrindavan, if anyone can think of me. But I think that Putana is kind of a unique situation. Kamsa didn't achieve that same end. Your other question was about anartas and how they relate to the practice of bhakti. Of course, the anartas are those things within the heart where our consciousness is covered or contaminated by those past impressions and experiences, you know, from many, many lifetimes. So do those have to be overcome, I guess was the question, before one can fully engage in bhakti? No. We simply engage in bhakti, and then bhakti is the purifying process. Of course, to be able to engage in bhakti, one has to have sufficient pious credit, in a sense, or has to have sufficient sukriti to be able to even engage in Krishna consciousness. But other than that, we all begin from a platform of having many anartas from many lifetimes. And those of us, particularly in this Western world, you know, we had many, many, many bad habits. But one can immediately take to the process of Krishna consciousness, and those things become destroyed. It's described that as soon as one becomes a devotee, as soon as one begins the process of chanting Hare Krishna, you know, those are all eliminated. Haridas Thakura gives a nice discussion about that, where he talks about Nambasa. The Nambasa, of course, is the stage where one is still making offenses. You know, it's like called like the clearing stage. It's not completely offensive, but it's not the pure stage either. And Haridas Thakura was talking about the glories
of even at that intermediate stage, if we just begin some sincere chanting of Hare Krishna, you know, how not only, he said, not only is liberation guaranteed, but eventually Krishna Prema, even beyond liberation, will come just by the beginning of the chanting of the holy name. So the idea is that we just start. We start the process, and the process of purification is there. The consciousness becomes cleared little by little as our consciousness associates with Krishna and everything to do with Krishna, Krishna's holy name, the deity form. All of these things are purifying the mind. Now, is that okay? All right. Anything else? Jai. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Thank you.